Welcome to the International Franchise Association's Women's Franchise Committee podcast, Her Success, the Stories of Female Franchise Leaders. I'm Michelle Rowan with Franchise Business Review, and today I'm talking with Jonna Bailey, CEO of FranNet, and also the 2019 Bonnie Levine Award recipient. That award is given for contributions to the growth of both her own company and her community that promote the advancement of women. So I'm very excited to talk with you today. Thank you so much for joining us. And I want to start, and I know that this is probably a long answer, but I want to start with, how did you get started in your career? And then how did you end up in franchising if you didn't start there?
It is long. It is interesting because there's been many twists and turns. I actually started out in banking as a secretary in the commercial loan department, and wound up spending 18 years in banking. And when I got out, I was a vice president of regional commercial lending. So worked my way through the industry, taking courses at night. And a lot of the time I was a single mom with two boys. I did everything kind of the hard way. I had my first son when I was 16, graduated from high school with a child. So it's been not the typical, you know, I went to college, got my degree, and then started this. I kind of did it all mushed together. But left Paducah and came to Louisville 30 years ago to work for PNC, which is a large regional bank in our area. And worked for them for 6.5 years, then worked for another bank that came to town for 2.5. And then I was just burned out. I mean, I was just done with banking. And so what I did was actually went out on my own for a couple of years. I did consulting and public speaking and did some work for SkillPath Seminars, the national company that we all get the flyers that drive us crazy. I was doing about 8 different topics for them and traveling all the time. And one of my local clients, and it actually came about by them seeing me speak at an event in Nashville, was a Fantastic Sam's regional team member. And they went back and said she would be good to do some training for us. And that started a couple of year relationship. And then I was presented with the opportunity to take the position as their regional director. And I ran a 5-state region for that owner for a little over 6 years, and was recruited by Fantastic Sam's Corporate to come in and be operations, primarily dealing with the regional operations side. And I went to Texas for them. That was my first assignment, to do a turnaround on a troubled region. And I was there when they had a changing of the guard. The president was set aside and a new guy came in, and that's always a little scary for those that have been handpicked by the president that just got ousted. And about that same time, FranNet had gone through an ownership change, and the new owners were reaching out, they called it to friends and family, to ask for recommendation for the president position. And as it just turned out, the guy that was the president of Fantastic Sam's had been a former FranNetter, and he threw my name in the hat. And as a result of me working within Fantastic Sam's, I had worked with some FranNet brokers, and 5 people were thrown in the hat for the job, and I came out with it. So that was 14 years ago this week, actually.
Amazing. Happy anniversary. Oh my goodness.
I'm jotting down. So all those little pieces, you know.
I know. I don't know if you see me. I'm jotting down. I have like 100 notes. We're on question 1 and I have 100 questions more for you. So I want to talk about the secretary to VP in a bank. We're probably talking, how many years ago is this?
Well, I went to work in that bank in 1977. Okay. And I was in rural Western Kentucky, a small town, Paducah, Kentucky, 30,000 people.
So that was probably, you probably have 100 stories just in that transition of rising in the ranks of a bank. So I'm curious, you said, you know, you have your children young, so you have 2 children, you're a secretary in a bank, you decide you want to do something different, something more. How do you attack that? Is it reaching out to the people you know? Did you have a plan? Did you just start with one goal? How did that all come together?
Those are really good questions. And as I think back to them, these are things that I do talk to younger people, you know, young women about. I was always asking for what else could I do? You know, this job was fun. I've learned a lot, but I got bored really easy. I would feel like I mastered that job and then I was just bored. And so I was constantly looking around the bank and saying, well, could I learn that? I'd raise my hand. And by the time I was put into the commercial lending training program, I had worked virtually in every department of the bank except the trust department. I had been a teller. I had been a vault teller. I had opened new accounts. I had worked in collections. So I just kept raising my hand. And I was lucky enough to have a mentor there who saw something and kept encouraging that. And then started laying out classes that were recommended for me in the position I had at that time, you know, whichever I did real estate lending, student loans. So they had me going and taking financial statement classes and that sort of thing. So all of that just kept feeding a hunger in me to learn more and more and more. So I kept taking classes. At one time, I was working the job at the bank, taking classes two nights a week, cleaning houses on the weekend because they weren't paying much back then for entry-level bankers, and doing telephone solicitation for an insurance company the nights I wasn't in school. So it was an interesting time.
Oh my gosh. And no sleeping, I'm assuming.
No, house cleaning happened after the boys went to bed. And
well, and so what's interesting on your bank journey, and I hear it in your franchise journey too, is in franchising, you've worked for a franchisee. You've worked for the franchisor, you've been a supplier. So same with the bank, it sounds like you had every position. So having that kind of 360 degree view of a business and all the players in it, I think is also interesting. And it might come from your boredom of, I don't want to be, you know, in a cube doing the one thing. I want to kind of understand the business, which is really, really interesting. I like that. You also mentioned too, and I'm jumping around here, but the change in management, I think that's something that we've all experienced either from an employee side where that's changed or watching or helping a business either from a consulting standpoint go through that change. What can you offer people as far as, I'm like you where I see that change of ownership, I've been part of it in companies and I kind of raise my hand or do what I can to kind of support people through the change. What would you give advice for people that are in that position, a little bit uncomfortable with the change that's coming ahead? How do you have any ideas on how they can help navigate that or make it?
I really do.
Yeah.
I mean, it was very scary because, and you know, I had gone through it a little bit in banking, watching the mergers and acquisition of banks around me. And I always believed in having an exit strategy. You know, we tell our franchisees to do that, always have an exit strategy. Well, that was always me. I was always like, because I was always reaching outside my comfort zone. When I was asked to take the job or the go into the training position to become a commercial lender, my bank president told me then I was an experiment. And if it didn't work, I couldn't go back to being a secretary because you just can't. And so I've always, and I learned with that, I sat down and was like, well, what's the worst thing that can happen? Well, I would have to leave the bank, but there were other banks and there were other opportunities for secretaries. But this was an opportunity that if I passed, would it ever come again? So that's an exit strategy of, okay, the best thing that could happen, what's the worst thing that can happen? And can I live with the worst thing that could happen? So when the change in guard happened at Fantastic Sam's, I found myself going, okay, What's my exit strategy going to be if the worst thing happens? Either I'm let go or I just don't like the new management, don't feel like I can work with them. You get your resume together, you get out your list of contacts, and you start around the edges letting, you know, putting feelers out. And I was in Texas, and one of the things the president that had hired me promised was that was going to be a 3 to 5 year stint total, and then I'd be moved back to Louisville. Well, I knew this new guy had no commitment to me, and I could have found myself left in Texas. And not that that's the worst thing that can happen, but it was too far from my kids. Yeah. So I started saying, okay, I think I want to go back to Louisville. And I started throwing out nuggets to people that knew me and just exploring what my options would be. Then you have to ask yourself, well, am I willing to take a step back to step forward again? How important is that location or that job? I actually had a couple of job offers working when this FranNet thing finally came together, and they were very different. One was being a primary fundraiser for a nonprofit, being in charge of the fundraising activities for a nonprofit that was near and dear to my heart. But that would have been very, very different than what I do now. I've never worked for a nonprofit, and I had good friends advise me I would probably be very frustrated because they move very slow. But I was lining up my options and looking at, again, best case, worst case. Well, if I took that job and I didn't like it, at least I was back in Louisville where I could network better. So if you see those things being presented in front of you that you think you might need an exit strategy, take all the blinders off. Get your resume ready, start networking, and just exploring. And don't be scared to take a step. Don't be forced to make a decision. Make it be your decision. I don't want to be in a position where I'm finding myself without a job and blindsided. I'd rather be proactive and know I have options if I need them.
Okay. I love it. Yeah. So I like that when you talked about reaching out of the comfort zone, because sometimes people think it's too scary to take that risk knowing you can't go back. So I like that worst case, best case scenario, and just the piece of kind of being willing to step back to move forward. So you're looking at a larger picture than just your next move, kind of like a chess game. So that's really, really interesting. You've talked about you had a good mentor that advocated for you at the bank. You've talked about you talk to younger people. I'd love to hear more about the importance of relationships in your career or what you see happening in the franchise industry as far as networking or mentorship. How do you make those asks, or how do you find those people that are important to you? And I'd love to hear just who some of your mentors or your support system within franchising is and what you're doing with younger people, how you're connecting with them.
Well, as far as being able to connect with younger people, I think I try to just be very approachable and very open to that. I'm doing some work with University of Louisville on the franchising segment they're doing in conjunction with IFA. And I have actually connected through that with a couple of people in franchising, women that just wanted to brainstorm with me. And now we have, you know, regular calls. So I've had that through the membership committee and through Franship as well, where, you know, I've had connections with men and women who just said, I felt like I connected with you at the membership opening at IFA. If you've got time, I'd love to have calls with you from time to time. And I'll never turn it down if I can squeeze the time in at all, because I feel like I have a big debt to owe for the people that helped me along the way. One of my mentors back in banking, well, my bank president was just an amazing person. He is still living, and I'm still in touch with him. But I was the first woman commercial loan officer in Western Kentucky. And he sent me to Nashville to spend the day with a lady commercial loan officer there, just shadow her. And it was more about, you know, if you don't have a role model, you're not sure how to dress. How do you conduct yourself in the meetings? How assertive could you be before you've crossed that line? You know, how do you handle when somebody says, would you go get my coffee? And you're their peer now. How do you navigate those waters? And I there was nobody for me to ask in my bank or even my community or our little area of Kentucky. So I was introduced, and this lady was gracious enough to mentor me through those early days. After that, I would just look for the people that I read a book one time that was like, find somebody who's doing what you hope to do. You know, what do they look like? What do they dress like? How do they present themselves? And you begin to emulate that. It was back in the day when Dress for Success first came out. You know, they told us to dress for the job you wanted, not the job you had. Yeah. So that meant quit dressing like a secretary and start dressing like I should be in that office making the loan decisions.
Yeah, I love that. Those
are the kind of things. But if you look around, and you'll know, you'll feel the connection with somebody. You'll feel like, and don't be afraid to ask. I've never known of anybody that had had paid some dues along their way, wasn't willing to help someone else. So don't be afraid to ask.
Yeah, good point. And going back to your worst case scenario, they say no, you find someone else.
Exactly. Or they may say, you know, I don't have that expertise in that particular area, but I know someone. And that's how we've spread our networks as well, is saying, you know, here's somebody that I'll be glad to coach you on just general taking the steps, but here's somebody who could help you in your industry specific area.
Yeah, I like that. And I'm thinking now too about the amount of time that's spent in our day is just connecting people, which is part of what we do and why we live
franchise. It is.
Yeah. So I've been in franchising for about 15, 16 years now, and it certainly is different now than it was then. You've been in it even longer, and so I'm hoping that it's progressed even more since when you started. But it is a lot of older white people in our industry. And I'm wondering, as leaders on our staffs and in the franchise community, how can we foster involving more women, involving more minority groups to understand the opportunities there are in franchising, whether it's on the supplier side or buying a franchise? What can we do to help make our industry more inclusive?
Well, I think the first thing is taking our blinders off and doing a lot of listening. I know for me, I never wanted to be complimented on being a really good female loan officer. I wanted to be a good loan officer. I didn't want to be given opportunities because I was a woman. I wanted to be given opportunities because I earned them and I was smart and I was aggressive or assertive and, you know, reached for them. I would have been insulted if somebody had come to me and said, we need to increase our women, so we're going to drag you in. That would have felt like it diminished that opportunity. So I think we all have to be aware of that. And when we're reaching out to people, we're looking for smart, hardworking, focused individuals that want to make the best of this opportunity in franchising. And when I'm interviewing to hire for a position at FranNet, I try not to think, well, I need a woman or a man or a person of color or, you know, it's just, I want the best fit. And the more we can look and think that way and keep our bias outside, and we all have some preconditioned filters that have been installed through our lives. So we've had bad experiences with this type person, or that reminds me of somebody that was mean to me once, and we've just got to try to tune those out. Now, don't ignore your gut if you got a bad vibe from somebody, but at the same time, be sure you're not making a decision based on an outer package. Be sure you're making decisions based on the brain setting in front of you and the heart and the willingness to work.
Yeah, the contribution. I love it.
Yeah, and so, I think when we reach out to people, you know, look for those things.
Yes, yeah. So it sounds, I mean, you navigated your path really well from when you were young. Now that you can kind of reflect back on it, is there anything that you today would tell yourself back when you were 20 years old? Any advice you would give or anything that you think would have made your journey a little bit easier or even different in the way that where you've ended up today?
The biggest lesson I needed back then, because at 20, I guess, 4, I was a single mom with 2 kids, and one of them was sick a lot with asthma. And I can't tell you how many times I sat down and cried. I can't tell you about standing in grocery lines wondering if I had enough money or I was going to have to take something out of the buggy, you know. And I would tell that 23, 24-year-old, it's going to be okay. That keep doing what you're doing, it's going to be okay. Because when you're in the middle of those tornadoes of life, sometimes you don't see. You can't see the sunshine, and all you see is that tornado and how it's just swallowing you up. So I wished I could go back and tell that girl to breathe more, relax more, enjoy those boys more. It's going to be okay.
Yeah. Oh, those are good. Those are still good things that we can do now. I need to slow down and breathe. okay. So I think that the last thing I'm going to ask you and on this side, and then I do have one follow-up question for you is, how about advice that you would give young women that are in our franchise industry now or entering the workforce that are doing this? What are some pieces of advice that you would give on how they can advocate for themselves or about their journey that they're about to embark on?
Good question. Set your goals. That was one thing I've done my whole life. And when you're getting close to one goal, you should already have the next benchmark. So don't ever feel like I'm there and I'm done. Keep looking at, okay, have a long-term goal, and then you break it down into short-term goals, like stepping stones. But if I'm going to get here, I got to get here and then here and then here. So really work on that strategic plan for you. Also, be willing to take detours, because at 24, 25, my goal was to be the first bank president of that little bank in Paducah. So, I didn't wind up there. I've wound up doing something much more fulfilling for me and on a touching a lot larger scope than I could have there. So don't be scared to take the detours. Don't be scared to adjust a goal, but have the goal and really focus on it. And every year, look at the progress you've made towards it and adjust as you need to keep moving forward.
I love it. And speaking of the big goals and things like that, well, one, how do you hold yourself accountable, or how often are you looking at the goals that you're setting even now? Are you holding yourself accountable? Do you have a group that helps you do that? And what's the frequency that you're revisiting those goals?
Well, my board of director does a pretty good job of holding me accountable. that's the thing now. And, my goals are company. And I'm at a point in my life now where there's a lot of reasons that I keep doing what I'm doing. I enjoy it. I want to give back. I want to be sure that my legacy at Franet is a very positive one. And, I want to be sure I've got the right people in all the seats. And I hope that someday I look at it and go, it's something we never dreamed it could be when I took this job. And it's because of this team that's been built and what they're accomplishing. And regardless of whether I show up tomorrow or not, this thing is, a steamroller going ahead. So those are my goals now. My goals now focus a lot on developing the right people and being sure the people that are on board have their maximum opportunity with us. I'm a firm believer you've got to see the potential and then let someone grow as far and as long as they're willing to. People put their own barriers up. They set their own, what I see a lot is I'm going to work 8 hours. Don't call me on the weekend. I'm not, it's 5 o'clock. Those are barriers people put up for themselves. I can remember going into the bank, getting a babysitter and going back into the bank at night to work on a particular presentation for hours. I would have never thought of saying it's not in my job description to come in and work 3 extra hours at night. You've got to want it worse than anything. So, I guess that's, if I could instill some of that want to and drive in all the people that work around me, I would be so happy.
Yes. Yeah. And if you love what you do, I think it's much easier to put that time in and figure out that balance. So speaking of your legacy, I'd love to talk about the broker industry and franchising. There's some great brokers out there and there's some not so great brokers out there. And I know that there's been a little bit of I'm not going to say scrutiny, but more eyes on the industry as a whole. And I know that you guys came up with an initiative. I think it was last year when I first heard about it. And I'd love for you to just talk about what drove you to do that and what kind of changes you're trying to make to really continue raising the bar of broker networks, but also our industry of franchising as well.
Yeah, it's actually, I guess, 3 years ago, maybe 2.5, we came out, first of all, with a client bill of rights. That was the first initiative. And it laid out for the client what they should expect from a Franetter. I know my people were doing it, but I wanted to be able to say to our clients, this is who we are. This is what we do. And also in there is what we don't do. We don't make the buying decision for you. At the end of the day, this is your livelihood. This is your ultimate decision. And so we really laid out our role in the process. We followed that with the first franchise broker disclosure document. And some people want to call it, you know, referral network document, whatever, but it's a disclosure document, just like, well, we're a franchisor ourselves, so I have to do already an FDD. So this is kind of a disclosure document to the client that says, here's how many concepts we work with. Here's the mix of concepts we work with. Here's our, who runs the company. Here's our training procedure for our people. Here's, you know, this, it really allows them to know we're a 32-year-old company. Exactly. We didn't just wake up and grab a website and say, hey, you know, it's a low entry. We're now franchise brokers. I've got 5 second generation Fran netters. We are entrenched in our communities. And I think those are things people need to know, that we aren't fly by night, you know, selling whatever and then we're gone. They need to know that we're committed to their success because it's our success. If we weren't doing the right things, we wouldn't have been in business 32 years and have these second generations that took over from a parent.
Right. Yeah.
And the biggest thing is people need to question who that person is they're taking guidance from. And do they really have your best interest at heart? And if they don't, run for your life and find someone that will help you and coach you through the process. And your best decision may be a no. And I think a lot of brokers are scared to even think that. But no is better than the wrong fit for an individual.
Yeah. It's usually their life savings that they're putting on the line. So I love it.
And maybe that comes from having been a banker and also a regional director. There's nothing worse than having somebody sit down in your office crying and saying, we're losing everything.
Yes. Yes. Especially.
And that's what everybody better keep in mind.
Yeah. And that's what you're hearing that more now. You're seeing that. So being in a business that can sustain you through what you don't expect is very important. I love it. Well, I thank you so much for your time today. It's so great to see people when they receive the awards. And I know that the IFA puts in the magazine a little bit more about you, but just hearing your story, I think there's so many lessons that I pulled out of it. So I really appreciate your time. And I would also say, anybody that is watching this too, if you have a local women's franchise network in your area, getting involved in those are a great way to meet other people. Yes. Volunteering for IFA boards and committees, and when they ask you, or you can raise your hand, get involved. It is a great industry. So I really appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.